Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati joined as always by Carter Augustine. Carter, how are you, man?
Doing okay, Nate. Tough result this past weekend for Sporting Kansas City.
No doubt about it. We will get to that. We also are joined by Allie Trost. Allie, how are you?
Doing well. I guess same as Carter. Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to do our best to lift the spirits of everybody here today if we can, because it was a tough one. 2-1 Sporting Kansas City lose to the Portland Timbers on Saturday night, and already what was somewhat of a long shot in terms of playoff hopes took another blow, but mathematically not eliminated yet. So we will talk about that game. We will lay out the scenarios now, and we will also preview another big road game if you want to try to get yourself back in the conversation for the playoffs at the LA Galaxy on Sunday. But we also have a very special guest coming up on the show. Megan Cameron is going to join us. And if you don't know who Megan is, you're going to want to tune in to that segment, because she's got a fantastic story to tell in terms of how she got here, what she does for the team. And I think you'll all find that very interesting, so we'll have that as well. And we might sprinkle in a little bit of U.S. men's national team. If the result for Sporting Kansas City wasn't depressing enough for you, we'll throw out what the U.S. men did against Mexico. This will be airing on a Friday night. I'm sorry, on a Tuesday night at the same time as the U.S. men's friendly that is playing tonight. We're taping this earlier in the day, so we don't know the results of that one yet, but we can get into the Mexico game as well. But let's start with it, Carter. Sporting Kansas City have a 1-0 lead on the cross shot by Benny Failhaber that snuck its way into the top corner. They look like they have put themselves in a position to get what would be a massive victory against one of those teams that they're chasing in the Western Conference. But it doesn't hold up. Portland get a goal to tie things up courtesy of Jeremy Abobase in the 82nd minute, but you're still thinking at that time, well, close out and get a point. That's still not a bad result in terms of the situation at hand. Into stoppage time, Brian Fernandez comes into the game, and you're talking about two designated players combining there in Diego Valeri and Brian Fernandez on the stoppage time goal to win it 2-1. Mob scene in the corner there, where the Portland Timbers fans celebrate, and you were on the sideline for it. Describe the scene for us for Sporting KC as what looked like a potential massive 3 points dissolved into nothing in the span of minutes.
Yeah, it was a tough end to the game, to say the least. Obviously pretty dejected on the bench, especially when that last goal went in. I still think you point to the equalizer as maybe where a lot of the frustration came. That's one thing that Peter Vermees singled out to us in the post-game interview on the TV broadcast. He brought up the first goal. He thought it was a little too soft, and that was just in the 83rd minute. And you knew from then they're going to have to hold on and try and hang on for the rest of the game. And like you said, you're able to bring in Brian Fernandez, and he makes the difference in the end. I will say, man, that place with the new roof and the new stands, you know, only added 4,000 fans, but that was very, very loud in that place. They've done a good job there with the renovations. I was impressed from that respect, but obviously not the cheer that the Sporting Kansas City team was looking for.
Yeah, I mean, Carter, going back to that equalizer goal, you see the breakdown and how it happens, catching all of the Sporting midfield and defenders kind of with their backs turned. You've got Jerso Fernandez sprinting back from up top. It's what we've seen too many times this season. It just a breakdown in the midfield results in the defense kind of backtracking and then catch them with their backs against the wall there, and then an easy, boom, ball slotted through, player open, just right into the back of the net.
Deflected on the cross, too. So it's like it just seems, you know, maybe they got a little bit of luck with Benny's cross going in, and then the luck just, as it has a lot of this season, just dries up with Zusi getting able to get over or it might have been Smith, one of the guys getting over and deflecting the cross, but it actually puts the cross into a better area than it was initially going to go to.
Yeah, I believe it was Graham Smith. And conversely, the most confounding season I think I've ever seen from a Sporting Kansas City player for Daniel Shalloway continues is that ball just falls right to him. Yep. And I just, I don't know how many times we've said something like this this year where 2018 Daniel Shalloway puts that away, maybe with a no look.
Yeah.
And in 2019, it just will not go in the goal.
Yeah, you wonder maybe last year he just like smashes that one instead of trying to do the dink. It's like you said, confounding. I think that's a good word for it.
Yeah, and we've talked about it too. I mean, I think at this point now, so late into the season, still no goal after leading the team in goals last season. It's a mixture now of confidence, maybe overthinking that. Maybe last season, 2018, Daniel Shalloway, even 2017, rookie Daniel Shalloway doesn't think as hard on that and maybe is able to put it away.
Yeah, and that wasn't the only chance. I mean, they had some chances in the game. Luis Martinez had drawn two saves from Steve Clark, where just kind of no one's stepping up on him. So he says, okay, I'll just keep waltzing into the box, and two pretty good rips on goal, and one of them he pushes onto the post when – they're still 1-0 up, Sporting KC. So they had some other chances other than the goal that they did get as well. And to have a 1-0 lead in the 83rd minute and not be able to get at least a point, because you feel like if they could have held on for a point there even, it's two less points for Portland, first of all. But then we've heard from the guys this week as well. They just need every point they can get at this point in the season.
Yeah, there's 6 points off the playoff pace now. There's a three-way tie in terms of points. I'm not going to get into all the tiebreakers yet because we still have 5 games to go on that. But
well, Sporting's down in the tiebreakers. They've got the 10 wins.
So they're pretty much going to need to make up 7 points on – and the three – I just meant the tiebreakers between the three teams on 43. Because right now you've got RSL, Portland, and Dallas all on 43 points. L.A. is right below the playoff line, the Galaxy at 42 points. So – It's basically, for all intents and purposes, a 7-point gap now for Sporting KC. You'd be looking at a 6-point gap if you got that draw. And if you also think about it, there's one of those teams, Portland, that would still be down on 41 points. They'd only be 3 points ahead of Sporting Kansas City with a game coming back to Children's Mercy Park. I will point out Portland's got a ton of home games the rest of the way, so maybe they're not the team you're looking to catch anyway. That does lead us to the fact that the LA Galaxy are the next team up for Sporting Kansas City. They're outside of the playoffs all of a sudden. And this would be the third year in a row for them not to make the playoffs if that's the case. With the money that they've spent, with the names like Ibrahimovic and now Pavone that they've brought in, you know that's not going to be something that's tenable for that organization as well. They are going to be a fired-up team, but they are not going to be an unbeatable team, Carter, when you go out to Carson, California on Sunday night.
Yeah. Like you said, it's pretty surprising that they've dropped below the playoff line. You feel like they've been in the playoff picture this entire year, mostly above the line. But it's pretty astonishing. We did a segment in one of our broadcasts a couple weeks ago where we kind of picked out which teams we'd be looking at, and neither I nor Matt Lawrence wanted to go near the Galaxy because he just kind of figured that they would see themselves across the line. But certainly not an unbeatable team, although they're really good at home. But you wonder, is Romain Alessandrini going to come back for them, maybe give them a little extra added push towards the end of the playoffs or towards the end of the regular season here? Not sure, but like you just mentioned, some of the players they have, it's going to be a tough challenge.
Yeah, and I mean, just going back to the standings too, it's really interesting how much of a little sliding dance it's been in this Western Conference. I mean, San Jose, Minnesota United, Real Salt Lake, Portland, LA Galaxy, all teams who have just really like, I mean, you know, you go up, you go down, you go up, you go down. And Sporting's, in the last couple of weeks and even couple of months, has really remained in that spot. So this is going to be a huge game for them to hopefully, you know, finally make that leapfrog jump that they've been trying to do and finally, you know, make a real push to get into the playoff section of this group. And, you know, with Portland getting off that hot start, you know, leading into this next stretch of home games that they have here, is LA Galaxy the team to beat?
Well, they got to find two. You know, they got to find two to pass. And really, to be perfectly honest, I mean, the blunt truth is that the real we keep talking about the tight race in the West. It's really from second to eighth.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, there's a gap between eighth and Sporting Kansas City and ninth.
Yep.
They looked over the past three wins like they were narrowing that gap a little bit, but that loss to Portland has recreated that gap. And so, you know, it's 5 points between eighth and ninth. Meanwhile, what is it between second and eighth? I mean, it's 4 points between second and eighth.
Yeah.
So that's how tight it is from those other teams. And Sporting have got to, you talked to Benny Carter. They know no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They have to win at least four of these last five games to have a shot.
Because you look at the max points possible, right? Mm-hmm. And for them, they've already played 29 games. They've only got 15 points left that they can get, which means that'll take them up to 52 points. You're looking at Seattle in second on 46 points. So you're looking at the max points possible, and it does look pretty difficult. And I think this Portland game kind of illustrates that despite all the struggles that they've had this season Sporting, they've had a couple of games where they've just allowed a goal in stoppage time, and that's taken some points away from them. You look at this game where they lost a point, Toronto, Vancouver. Over the entire stretch of this season, they
gave up a late goal against Houston in Houston. Yep.
They've lost some points, and there's been a bunch of them in stoppage time as well. Like where they only need to hold out for another minute or so. So I would imagine that's pretty frustrating for the guys.
Yeah, and I think looking back on this Portland game specifically, what might be the most frustrating part of it all is that while they were missing a lot of players on international duty, and obviously Felipe Gutierrez serving that yellow card accumulation suspension, defensively the depth was there. They were missing Barath, but they all, Graham Smith has been making that start next to Matt Beisler in the central defensive tandem that they've got. Luis Martins has been solid. You've got Graham Zusi. And then offensively, Daniel Shalhoub, Jurso Fernandez, and Eric Hurtado, all three being available. Again, looking back on past seasons with Jurso and Shalhoub, their production, the team, while they were without Johnny Russell and, missing a pretty large group of players, they had everything. They had all the pieces to get the job done and win that one. So I think, looking ahead, it's going to come down to, can they get the most out of some of those players that they just haven't been seeing a lot from?
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to sit down with Megan Kammer. Long-form interview. You're going to want to hear this, get to know one of the big members of Sporting Kansas City's technical staff. As the Sporting Kansas City Show continues right after this.
Sports Radio 810 WHB, Kansas City's exclusive home for Sporting Kansas City.
The Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. And, of course, if you're listening via the podcast, we appreciate you downloading the pod wherever you get your podcasts, be that by asking Alexa through iTunes, Spotify. We hope you subscribe. We hope you like the podcast, and we hope you keep listening. We've got Allie Trost and Carter Augustine with us as always, and we've been doing this all season long, where we've been bringing in people from kind of behind the scenes, people that make things happen for Sporting Kansas City, to give you hopefully a little bit more perspective on what goes into the whole operation and what you see on game day. And today, very excited to have this guest on. We've been talking about doing it for a long time this season, finally getting around to it. Megan Kammer, who is the club's assistant director of player personnel, been on since December of 2017. Hello, Megan. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you. And I remember the first time I met you, I think you got announced in December, and then you were at the holiday party.
Yes.
Like a couple of weeks later.
Yes.
And so I remember chatting with you and finding out all about the things you're going to do. So we're going to get to all that here in a little bit in terms of what you do for the team. But let's talk about you, just how your background a little bit, get to know you. So Roxbury Township, New Jersey, correct? That's where you're from?
Correct. Also known as Sukasana.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah.
What does that mean? I don't even know what that means.
I'm not sure either. I should know. I grew up there. My parents still live there, so I should probably know these things. Sukasana, but Roxbury High School. Grew up in North Jersey. Perfect spot. 45 minutes from Manhattan, 45 minutes from the beach, 45 minutes from the mountain. Pretty good upbringing. So
I'm not that familiar with the whole New Jersey thing, but I hear townships all the time because Peter's from a township in New Jersey, right?
Correct.
Are you close to the area where Peter grew up?
Absolutely not. I'm from the better part of New Jersey, which
nice.
Is North Jersey.
Clearly.
Yeah, North Jersey and South Jersey, it's like two different worlds.
Okay.
So I'm from the superior part of New Jersey.
How's the soccer in North Jersey?
It's good. It's strong.
Yeah.
I played for a club called PDA, which is actually in Central Jersey, which, depending on who you ask, exists or doesn't exist. So a lot of the girls from my team were, kind of drawn from the shore or from North Jersey. Didn't really have a lot of South Jersey just because it's a little bit further to get to be honest. New Jersey's big.
Yeah.
Do you and Peter ever get in little tiffs about, which Jersey's better?
No, I try to stay away from that one a little bit just because he's a Philly fan. So it's just like, not going to end well for anybody.
So growing up, how'd you get into soccer? You just mentioned the club you played for. And then, you know, how did you progress as you got to be known as a pretty good soccer player?
Thank you. I have an older brother. He's 4 years older than me. So typical younger sibling syndrome. I had to do everything he did. And so he was playing soccer, so I was playing soccer, I think, before I could walk, and just kind of worked my way through and did the whole dance and gymnastics and basketball and all that stuff. And then over time, everything just started to weed out and stayed on with soccer and moved out of Roxbury Township club team to go play for a select team, I think, when I was 11 or 12, which was kind of unheard of at the time. My parents were driving an hour both ways to training to go play for a team in Wayne, New Jersey. And then at that point is when PDA was starting up. So I was on the second team to ever be in PDA. That was before they had their massive fields and all that stuff. So just kind of worked my way through PDA, played at PDA for Mike O'Neill since I was 14 years old. All the way through college. Mike's now the head coach at Rutgers too. So moved on from PDA to Rutgers with seven of my teammates in our incoming class, which was really fun.
So by the time you got to Rutgers, was there just like Peter Vermees memorabilia up on all the walls? Was he a legend there? Did you know Peter Vermees was when you were playing at Rutgers?
I knew who he was. Yeah. But to be honest, the men and women's soccer they train at different spots.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, there's five campuses to Rutgers. So we were on one campus, the men were on another. We shared the same home field, but we didn't train in the same spot. So,
well, it's one thing to, you know, play soccer growing up and to play through college, but then it's another thing to eventually take on a career in soccer. And you did that right out of college. What was the decision behind wanting to, you know, not only play your whole life, but then go on and work in soccer as well?
So very, very long story, but I'll keep it as concise as I can. I had quite a number of concussions in college and couldn't play my senior year. I had to sign away eligibility, the whole nine yards. And so I started with an internship with the Metro Stars, which are now the Red Bulls, obviously, and just decided that I needed the sport in my life. And I didn't know how I was going to do that, but that's just what catapulted me into the job because, you know, you're going through a lot of changes in terms of my livelihood was taken away from me not being able to play anymore. And I didn't get to make that decision, which was very, very difficult, as you can imagine. And so when the internship came on, I actually stayed on for 9 months. And I enjoy telling the story because my dad gets so angry. So my role as an intern there was a marketing intern. What that essentially meant was I was driving to players' houses, picking them up and driving them to player appearances. My car was a lease and my dad was furious.
Put some miles on that.
Oh
thing,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah. And so I ended up, you know, just staying through there, and after that, moved on to DC United, which is where I got my first big kid job. I really love DC, but I started in inside sales. Everybody's got to start somewhere, right? I was the worst salesperson in the world, like the worst. I was making less than $20,000 a year plus commission. And I think I made $100 in commission. It was so bad. So I was fortunate enough to move over to their charitable arm, doing their golf tournament, their luncheon, planning all that stuff. And I had a boss at the time who was, you know, he was my sales boss. And, you know, I still had a good relationship with him. And he said to me one day, if you don't like what you're doing, don't spend another day doing it. And I quit a week later. Didn't really know what to do. Called my dad crying. And I was like, I hate it. I don't know. Like, applied to grad school, got accepted, and moved back north and took a sports marketing job with the idea of going to grad school at the same time. Signed up for my first couple classes. I was dead set on paying for it myself. My parents, you know, took care of college. Obviously, I had a scholarship, but they still, you know, had paid some part of it. So I was dead set on being an adult and paying for school on my own. It turns out that Columbia is really expensive. So I signed up for the classes and I immediately withdrew and I actually never went to grad school. And about that time I was laid off from my sports management job, which was probably the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And a month later I was, you know, interviewing for a job in the league office and excuse me. And so started out at the league office, player personnel coordinator, basically processing paperwork and payroll. And as everybody knows, it's a single entity enterprise. And so I was literally writing the memos for players to get paid, and worked my way up over 8 years. And that was kind of what got me into the job of keeping soccer in my life. And it wasn't until I was in league office probably about 5 years when I stopped and was like, I can make a career out of this.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't a job anymore. Like, this is something I love and I can actually see a future with. So it's kind of the very long-winded way of answering that.
Well, but we had talked about, you know, mm-hmm. that grind, that early career grind, and, you know, maybe starting off in jobs that you don't necessarily love, but it kind of leads you to where you are now. How important were those roles, even the ones that you didn't like, in shaping you and preparing you for your role now?
Yeah, I think they're so important, because I firmly believe, you know, coming from working your way up, you have to do the little things to perfection in order to succeed further on in your career. You know, there's so many times where I've worked for different people, or I've had different people in different parts of the companies that I've been in that just came into their roles from another area, and they didn't know how to do like little things. And so for me, it was always just being able to be the most proficient person there. You know, I kind of just always tell myself, knowledge is power. The more you know, the better you are. And so that's kind of what I've taken on into that, of just saying, I'll do the jobs nobody wants to do, because it's going to actually help me be more well-rounded to move on later on.
Okay, this is fun. Let's let's go around the table here, and I want each person to say the dumbest thing they've done in their job that had nothing to do with what they actually wanted to be when they grew up, because I know that my first job out of college was in a small town called Moberly, Missouri. Al, you might know it, being a Missouri grad. It's about 30 minutes north of Columbia. And I did the weekly trading post, which is where people from small town Missouri would call in to the radio station. This was before things like eBay existed, and sell like used lawnmowers and many other private items that were pretty crazy. And I also emceed 4-H shows, where little Billy would, like, you know, have a blue ribbon pig or whatever that it would hog that it would raise and things like that. Clearly, I did a really good job at it. So those would be the first two that would come to my mind. I feel like I've got an idea for Carter, but how about you, Carter?
Well, aside from selling women's shoes the first 3 years I was here, as I was an intern and then part-time, which I actually made decent money selling the women's shoes there for a little while.
Were you like, what was your rapport like with ladies? Did you help them? Like, no, I think you'd look better in a pump, or did you?
No, I pretty much told them everything looked good that they tried on.
Carter, that's like the last thing you can do.
No, that seems like the best thing you can do. If
actually,
you're
was pretty
best for the sales, worse for getting home and being like,
what did I do?
Buy these.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it takes
buyer's remorse.
Yeah, exactly.
Buyer's remorse.
I'd rather get them out the door with the commission. So,
I should have tried that in my inset sales job.
These tickets.
Yeah, Megan, take some. Carter could do a class on this.
Other than that, I was Blue the Mascot one time, and that was I think that was probably the thing where I was questioning, you know, what am I doing here?
Can I point out one time Carter was supposed to show up at my charity 5K race as Blue the Mascot, but he was missing a hand.
Oh, no.
And you can't really go out there as a mascot with like a human, just one human hand.
Yeah.
So we did not have an appearance from Blue the Mascot to race that year.
Got bailed out a little bit there.
I want to scare the kids.
I'm missing a hand. I can't do it. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, or you could just like put both in one, right? You walk around and.
Al, you're so, this is the very infancy, I feel like, of your career. You're not too far out of college. Have you done anything stupid yet, like that says, you know, this is where I don't want to be here, but it's going to help me get somewhere else?
Yeah, I would say it's more of like maybe not where I am now, because it's hard for me to, you know, look at where I'm at now, you know, from that outside perspective, because I'm sure looking back in a few years there might be things now that I'm like, oh, that was not really, you know, anything to do with anything. But I'd say it was more, I started working when I was like 15. My parents were like, oh, okay, you're able-bodied. You can get a job. And so, I mean, I think the biggest thing, you know, I worked a ton of soccer camps like every week of the summer in my high school and even early college years growing up. long days. I was overnight counselor. I was helping kids homesick. We're talking them down, keeping them calm, making sure they're not about to have a full-blown panic attack, temper tantrum, whatever it may be. But I think looking back, I mean, I bussed tables. I was a hostess. I did a little bit of everything, working different events.
You bartend at Harpo's?
I did. I bartended through college. That's what supported my, just, you know, I, much like you, I was very independent, wanted to pay for everything. Mm-hmm. And so that was an experience. You learn a lot behind the bar. But I think, you know, for me, in terms of like, as it relates to sports, all of my sports work in my first year and a half, completely unpaid. So that was including college, including a little bit of post-grad as well. So I think that was maybe the biggest thing, you know, even though it was all very valuable looking back, it's like, that's a lot of time and energy and that you put towards something you're not making a dime on, but
it's an investment, like you said, Megan.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, you're processing contracts. And like you said, it's single entity in MLS. And it seems like there's a one or two rules when it comes to contracts.
Maybe
and all
one
the,
or two.
Yeah, one, all the different. How difficult was the process for you, or maybe just challenging or fun? How would you describe the process of learning the ins and outs of the CBA and how everything worked with the contracts while you were working for the league office?
Well, I was actually really fortunate to be at the league office during the period of the greatest growth that they've had. In, you know, the short history that the league's been around. And so I was actually in the room for a lot of the rule changes that were coming up. So as things were happening and you're starting to come up with different mechanisms and, you know, like the whole reentry draft, I mean, that was spearheaded primarily by, in conjunction with the Players Association, obviously, but it was Tim Bezuchenko and Ollie Curtis, and just sitting in the room and just coming up with it, like on a just whiteboarding the entire idea of it, took probably about 6 months of back and forth with the Players Union, Players Association, sorry. And so a lot of those things, it's easier to know the rules because you're the one that's actually poking the holes in it and creating them. And so when I first got on, it was very difficult, and I was just like, wait, why? What? Why? Why wouldn't you do it? No, that doesn't make sense. And you start questioning things a lot. So I did a lot of asking questions pretty early on of just trying to get an understanding. And sometimes you sound like an idiot. Like you, and people are like, that's obvious. This is the answer. And then I kind of switched roles and I became that person a little bit later on. People ask me questions and I'm like, that's obvious. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have the evolution of the role. But, you know, for me, it's I don't think they're difficult. But I think it's just because it's just ingrained in my brain now of how they work. And like I said, I was very fortunate to be at the league office during such a great period of growth and through the last CBA to understand why things are happening, when they're happening, and how they're happening, which makes life a lot easier for me.
Who, like you said, you're in a very interesting part of the league's growth during your time there. Who did you work with a lot at the league offices? You've had so many ex-players come mm-hmm. through their ranks and stuff like that.
So I worked primarily for Todd Durbin and Lino DiQualo, who I learned so much from, just in terms of, you know, understanding how, like they're not the managers that'll sit down and explain something to you, but just watching how they do business is and how they manage different situations was really, really interesting. Tim Bezbachenko and I started 2 weeks within each other in league office in 2010. So Tim and I still to this day call him El Jefe because I was reporting. I was reporting to him for a short period of time as he was a director when he first started, and Ollie Curtis, like I mentioned, Will Kuntz. So we all kind of came through this main class, and there's still you know, a couple really, really good up and coming staff members that were once my interns, and so I always kind of pat myself on the back that my interns were always getting hired for full-time jobs, and they're great, great people, and I think they have a lot of potential too to, you know, to make the jump to a club eventually.
So for the record, when you called Tim El Jefe, that was a term of respect and endearment,
yes,
right?
Yes, he was the boss. Yeah.
Yeah. Just I'm pointing that out to Carter because I called him El Jefe on this show for the first 3 years that we did it, and he thinks I'm giving him a hard time. It's really respect and, you know.
Yeah, but Bez is Jefe. Like,
and Carter's going to have a new appreciation.
Bez can have that one. Bez Pacheco can have that.
Carter is has shunned the nickname. So, and out of respect, I've shunned it as well. we have Megan Cameron with us, the club's assistant director of player personnel. I watched Jerry Seinfeld once do a bit on what lawyers are in life. And he said, basically, we're playing the board game life. We're moving our pieces around. We're spinning the wheel. The lawyers are the only ones that actually read the instructions and the game rules on the back of the box. So I thought that was a pretty good analogy of what lawyers are. And I kind of feel like that's like a description of why you were brought here, because you've got a team that's trying to navigate all the ins and outs of salary caps and budgets and the different mechanisms that you can use to bring in players. Why don't we bring in somebody who actually helped write all the rules and was a part of that? Would you say, is that a good description of one of the main things you do or not? How would you describe it?
Yeah,
what your role is?
I think that's pretty accurate. Obviously, Peter and Brian are brilliant soccer minds, and they don't need my help in understanding the rules in any way, just because they have such a rich history within the league and just playing the sport and knowing a lot. And you know, I learn a lot from them every day. But I think it was a piece of it of having a different perspective on things. And I think Peter didn't hire me for any specific reason other than he just knew that I was up for the challenge and I could do the job and I can compliment the team. So, I think it certainly helps. It certainly helps to be able to know the reason behind why rules were made and hopefully finding a couple loopholes here or there along the way that can help the team succeed.
It also lists on your description, though, here about some scouting as well. Are you actively scouting with the team? Is that a new responsibility for you? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's fairly new. So that was part of the master plan when I came in, was to work on scouting and player identification from Academy, Sewell Park Rangers, first team. And it's an acquired skill. It's not something that you can literally just, go online and look up a player and go, hey, like, I like this guy. I mean, maybe you could if you get lucky, but you have to really understand the needs and characteristics of each specific position within the club and why certain players fit and don't fit. So I've spent the last year, with the coaching staff and, even like Carrie and Zoran and as we're looking, sitting around the table and looking at different players, and I'm going, okay, why do we like him and not him? They seem very similar to me, and kind of taking that back seat to where I was when I first started as a coordinator and player personnel in the player relations department at the league office, and just questioning everything and going, this is probably a dumb question, but I need to understand why one player is more suited than the other in order for me to be able to now go out and do similar things. So it's something that, I'm tasked with now, and kind of start small and see what I can do. And I've got a couple, contacts from my time in league office internationally that, different agents and whatnot that I can reach out to now and start saying, hey, this is who we might be looking for. This is, these are the qualities and characteristics. So looking forward to it.
Yeah.
It sounds
fun.
It does.
If you had to pick one thing that you're looking for above all else, what would that be?
I think it's understanding the player to just live and breathe the core values of the club, in terms of the on-field performance, because first you have to understand if they're going to work on-field, but then you also have to understand if they're going to work off-field. So, just the relentless pursuit of excellence, the work ethic, the intelligence, and looking at those pieces of the player on field is what's going to stand out. Because if the player isn't, if you're looking at an attacking player and he's not willing to work back to defend, it's like, okay, well, that's probably someone that we're not really going to look at. So things like that, I think that's probably the biggest piece, is just making sure they fit the culture of the team, both on and off field.
Well, you've talked about it a little bit just with your past couple of answers, but what's it been like, the transition from the league office to working for a club, and do you like the change?
I love the change. My answer to that usually is it's probably one of the most humbling experiences I've had. I'm not super old, but in my time, it's certainly the most humbling. And I mean that in the respect of when I was in league office, I was the person that everybody came to. Like, literally every single club would call me, hey, Megan, we need this. What do you think about that? Can you get this information? I was, you know, kind of jack of all trades. And coming here, I was no longer the person that everybody had to come to, and I was actually going to other people. And so that was very humbling for me to have to sit back and go, okay, well, I actually need help, people's help now. But it's been a great experience for me, and I've learned so much, and I've learned that I don't have to have my hand everywhere, but I can, going back to what I was saying earlier about knowledge is power, I feel that for me, I enjoy being, I think I thrive when I'm at my busiest, and when I have the most of my plate. So I tend to try to take on quite a bit, but it's been great so far.
We asked Betsy this little bit. We had Betsy Maxfield on earlier this year to talk about her role with the club. She's been here for quite some time, and I'm just always curious, being a female in a men's professional sports league, what's the experience like for you? How are you treated? How is the experience? How has it been from a league level and locally?
Well, I'll say from locally within this club, I don't notice it. The staff's amazing. I never feel like I'm the only female in the room, obviously Betsy's around as well, but in terms of like being in the technical meetings and stuff like that. So I never feel different. I never feel like I'm treated different. They act the same way, whether there's a female there or not, which is what I ask of them. You know, I'm part of the team and it shouldn't matter. The only thing is I just don't go in the locker rooms, which is a strict rule for me. And, you know, even the player locker rooms, pre or post game, I refuse to go in. That's just something I feel very strongly about, and that's kind of their sanctuary, their place, especially when they're preparing for a game. In the league, it was, there was times, you know, I'd be in a technical committee meeting and there'd be 70 men and I'd literally be the only woman in there. Again, no difference. The GMs, technical directors, head coaches around the league are super respectful people and always, you know, gave me my due and gave me the time I needed, and they respect me, and you know, I'm very thankful for that because everybody around the league's been great.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Carl.
I was going to say, from another perspective, your role makes you a role model for others and women that are looking to get into sports.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just kind of curious what's that like, and how do you take that aspect of being so high up as, like you said, maybe the only female in a room of 70 guys?
It's super exciting. I tend to not view myself that way. I don't know if it's because it's a little bit of fear of letting people down, because this is a new role for females in the industry. But I also love the challenge of it. So for me, I've always just kind of said, it doesn't matter if I'm the first female, the last female, the next female, I'm just gonna put my head down and do the work. It's quite empowering in one way to know that I'm kind of helping, someone else that might want to follow and do something similar, whether it be in Major League Soccer or elsewhere in the world. But at the same time, it's, you know, I always just, I feel like I'm downplaying it, but I'm just doing my job. So it's a little bit of both.
Speaking of the job, what is one thing that you wish people knew about your job that they might not expect? And just kind of reading your title, reading your, you know, the rundown of what you do. What's something that people might not expect?
Well, it'd be great if I stopped getting the emails from HR about, like, employee benefits. Because, you get these, like, mass things, and it's, like, player personnel. They just see personnel, and, like, I just keep getting this all this HR stuff. So that would be great. My role is still, it's still kind of being defined in that way. Obviously I get to do a lot of the great things with roster and budget management and the contracts, and thankfully working for this club and this ownership group, our owners are spectacular people, and they're so easy to speak with, and they understand the sport, but they also understand that we are more of we're the ones that they're relying on for the knowledge. So I think a big piece of my role is, kind of working with Peter a lot in terms of translating from technical speak to executive speak into stuff that they can understand, which I don't think a lot of people really know about the role. It's just kind of something that's evolved over time. And I think that's something that a skill that I learned in the league office working with, Todd and ownership from group up from that side of being able to put it in soccer terms, into executive terms.
To wrap things up here, once again, we have Megan Cameron, Assistant Director of Player Personnel for Sporting Kansas City. We've talked a lot about the CBA and all the different rules in the league, and we know we got another one coming up. How much of what you're doing right now is trying to anticipate where the league's going to go? The league has changed so much, mm-hmm. in especially the last 10 years, it seems like.
Absolutely.
How is that rate of change going to accelerate? Is it going to continue in your mind? How much change are we looking at, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years in this league?
Yeah, I mean, I think the league is still, I think it's at a steady growth now. It's not as rapid as it was. But a lot of the time that Brian and I are spending right now is trying to forecast. You know, you're trying to figure out what the roster is going to look like, what the budget's going to look like, how much money you have to work with. And you don't know until the CBA is done. So it's pretty difficult in terms of trying to prepare for the following season. I mean, last year we did a lot of preparation in getting ready for CCL and having the roster that we had to do as well as we did. Obviously it didn't go as planned, but so now it changes a little bit into looking into 2021, you know, 2020, 2021, and getting an idea on what we need to do, where we need to change things. And it's actually very, very difficult. And I, now being on this side of things, I'm going, oh, now I know why the clubs are always calling, asking these questions. Like, I used to get so frustrated with them, and I'm like, now I'm one of those people, but yeah. it all makes sense now.
Well, Megan, it's awesome to get to spend some time getting to know you a little bit. Hopefully our listeners, you know, feel like they know a little bit more about what you do as well. And good luck getting ready for that the next wave of rules changes in the league.
Thanks.
That's Megan Cameron. We'll take a break. We'll be back to wrap things up. We'll look ahead to the LA Galaxy and Zlatan for Sporting Kansas City as we wrap things up with the Sporting Kansas City Show.
Sports Radio 810 WHB. Kansas City's exclusive home for Sporting Kansas City.
Wrapping things up on the Sporting Kansas City Show this week, Nate Bucati along with Carter Augustine and Allie Trost, and we're talking about Sporting now. And by the way, our thanks to Megan Cameron. Great stuff from her. Really appreciate her sitting down and giving us so much of her time. Sporting KC at the LA Galaxy on Sunday. I will point out, guys, that the Galaxy are one of the teams that have a midweek game this week. They are at the Colorado Rapids on Wednesday. Carter, do you think that has any impact on the game on Sunday when it relates to Sporting Kansas City, them having to play one of those midweek games?
Well, certainly, yeah. And at Colorado, they'll play at altitude as well. You wonder if that takes a little bit more out of the bodies of maybe some of their older players especially. That is a bonus for Sporting Kansas City. And Colorado they've gotten a few results over the past couple of months. They're not a walkover team by any means, especially at home.
Yeah, and you know, they sit right behind Sporting in the Western Conference right now. However, they've got 33 points. Their chances at the playoffs are pretty slim. But, you know, again, Western Conference opponent, LA Galaxy, you know, also fighting to get back into that playoff, you know, spot, leapfrog seventh place there to have a shot. They're looking for all the points they can get. However, you do wonder if they're going to try and rest some of the players that they have. Will Zlatan travel with the team? He's been known to, you know, maybe not go to certain games and get some extra rest. So interested to see how they navigate that, especially having a home game this upcoming weekend.
And you wonder, Colorado maybe out of the playoff picture, but they've got the new coach, mm-hmm. and these guys are playing for contracts. So they've got a lot to play for as far as individual players go.
And the Galaxy don't exactly have a situation where they can afford to take anything for granted at this point with only a few games remaining. Other Western Conference games, folks, on Wednesday to scoreboard watch, if you're still holding out hope. Houston hosting Minnesota United. Minnesota United, I believe, are back in second place. Actually, I take it back. They're in third place, 1 point off of second place. But that's another team that Sporting Kansas City will play later, Minnesota United. And RSL hosting San Jose. I know San Jose is one of those teams, Carter, you think maybe for Sporting KC you root against. So we'll keep an eye on those games before Sporting roll around on Sunday at 9 o'clock. That game will be on ESPN Kansas City 94.5 FM with me and Carter on the call. All right, guys, we only have a couple minutes left, so I just want maybe a minute from each of you. USA versus Mexico. I know it's a friendly. Allie, tonight your hometown is hosting the U.S. men's national team as well. Sure, it's tough for you not to be there, but Give me some thoughts, Carter. Where are we with the men's national team right now as Greg Berhalter tries to build this thing?
Still a ways to go, as evidenced by that Mexico game. I think Christian Pulisic saying the team played scared against Mexico. I think that's pretty eye opening when you have your top player coming out and saying that in the press. Hopefully they don't play scared. I actually saw some Mexican fans saying that's how Mexico actually was against the U.S. for a good stretch in the early 2000s up until they were able to come from behind in the Gold Cup final with that crazy 4-2 game where they came back from 2-0 down and wound up beating the U.S. and that really reinvigorated the program. So hopefully we can get a result like that. This is a good Mexico team, though, and I think what's for me eye-opening about this result is it's going to be a battle with them for a long time because they have some really top young players, and Berhalter's got some work to do.
Yeah, I think the biggest disappointment from that game, you know, just conceding those late goals. Josh Sargent, they get a penalty kick, missed opportunity, not a solid shot, and then you consider what Pulisic said after the game and playing scared. You did see that a lot because USA did have opportunities, but I think, you know, from a mentality standpoint, going forward and as they do try to build this thing under a new head coach, is you want to see against a team like Mexico, the team owning the magnitude of the moment and not being, you know, be the team that changes the perception of the U.S. men's national team going forward. And that game was just, it was just a disappointment. You know, they were in it for most of the game, and then to see it completely just crumble there at the end, you just got to see the mentality staying strong throughout a full 90 minutes, and that just was not there.
Well, Tata Martino said before the game that they don't consider the United States right now the big rival that they once were because they are trying to punch from the upper part of the second tier of teams into maybe the same class as some of those South American teams. Some of that I think is a dig at the United States because of the way things went with the managerial search. But I have to say, the proof has kind of been in the pudding. They look like they're at a different level than the United States right now, and I take zero joy in saying that because I don't think that was even the case. I mean, clearly, last World Cup cycle in Brazil, I think the United States were a better team than Mexico. I mean, they had to help Mexico get into the World Cup. Things have changed quickly and for the worse for the United States, and that's kind of disappointing.
Well, I think maybe that can illustrate how quickly it can change back as well.
Good point.
Yeah.
And you know, we've got some young players coming through, and hopefully we'll see Josh Sargent getting the start tonight. I don't know, but hopefully some of these young players can change that quickly.
Like you said, if they fall far fast, they can climb up hopefully just as fast.
That's good, and we'll be back with you next week, hopefully talking about the Sporting Kansas City team doing that with a big win to reinvigorate this last second playoff push against the Galaxy. So Sunday night, 9 o'clock on ESPN Kansas City, 94.5 FM. For Carter Augustine and for Ali Trost and our special guest Megan Cameron today, this is Nate Bucati saying thanks for listening to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show.